you've chosen to tune in to DLC. Especially if you're one of our geeks in sneaks, using this podcast to power you through a workout or a run, or maybe you're just doing housework. Maybe you're getting the your place ready for the folks that are coming over. Maybe you're cooking incredible amounts of food. Whatever it is, we're going to try to help. We're going to try to be here. Hey, maybe you're standing in line for those sweet Black Friday deals. I don't know what you're doing. Whatever you're doing, we're in your ear holes, and we're grateful for it. For 90-plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free, thanks to our sponsors this week, Made in Cookware and Theragun. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show, all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata, that's spelled with two N's and one T, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the guy who is a Black Friday deal, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian!
Yeah, but I'm like a different model. Like, on the ad, it looks good. It's like, Christian Spicer deal. And then you get there, and you're like, wait, this is Christian Spicer 240184, and what I wanted was 240183. And so it's like, I don't have HDR, but I'm still 77 inches. So it's like kind of good, but I don't, you have me in your arms, so you may as well carry me to the checkout. I'm so curious about, anyway, as we have our second pandemic winter, like, so we have a great guest. We'll get to it. I just need to say this as you kind of teed it up. It kind of blows my mind that we're having Black Friday 1 year after this new generation of consoles came out. And not only are there not really any Black Friday deals on these consoles, there still aren't these consoles. It's just the world we live in is still so surreal. Like, oh, what's our Microsoft's bundle going to be? Nothing.
It's the it's the hottest Christmas gift for 2022. New consoles.
The consoles that came out in 2020. It's wild, man. It's wild.
We're living, you know, beyond the veil at this point. Up is down, left is right. Dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria. Anyway, we're going to try to be with you, try to hang out, try to get you through it, all of it. All we're all in it together. And we got a lot to talk about. And we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Cannata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I'm so excited because DLC stands for Detective Lead Character. Because we have the voice of Mycroft Holmes. From the brand new Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1 video game, Philippe Boucher's here with us. Hey, Philippe!
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Christian. Thanks for having me. That was not what I had written down, but it was very close. So I was I was attempting to deduct what your introduction for me would be. And I went for deducting logical conclusions.
And yet,
if only I had come up with a limerick to come up with later in the show, then I really would have hit the trifecta of Jeff-Cannata-isms. But alas, not this week. Thanks for having me, guys.
It's great to have you. And first, I want to ask you what it's been like being part of this game. I haven't played it yet, but it's been getting real good reviews over on Steam. It just came out, 3 days ago? 4 days ago?
Tuesday the 16th. So 5 days ago is the time of recording. It's kind of incredible. I mean, I know that you both have done acting work. And Jeff, I know that you've done voice work in games. I don't know if you have, Christian. But I recorded this back in January this year. I was auditioning for another game. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say what it was. It was a Warhammer game. I've done work in a Warhammer world before.
I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say what it is. Okay. Let me just say
I'm not going to be specific. But it was a video game.
How many Warhammer games could there possibly be?
There are so many Warhammer games. This is one. I was like, it's fine. And I then got a random email saying, hey, would you be interested in auditioning for Mycroft Holmes in an indie Sherlock Holmes game? And I knew that there's only one company, Frogwares, who makes Sherlock Holmes games. And Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1 had already been announced. So I looked it up and played a bit of The Devil's Daughter. And it's kind of incredible because it's my first video game role. And as you say, it's a big story part. I have always loved the character of Mycroft Holmes because he's the extra clever one. Sherlock's the clever one, and then Mycroft's the one who doesn't have to go anywhere. He just sits at home and he sits in his club, and he just figures everything out from the comfort of his own chair. Right. And so when they were like, could you play the smartest guy in the world, smarter brother? I was like, that is me, friends. Finally, being a nerd and getting bullied for years comes into its own. I know exactly what it's like to play an antisocial genius.
So. It's the one clip you can't send to like your grade school haters and be like, see, you had me. Exactly right. Oh, yeah. You nailed it. You.
That's it. Well, I didn't have to act at all. It was all in the DNA.
Yeah, and it sounds like it's a lot about the brothers. This is young, very young Sherlock Holmes, right? This is it's called Chapter One, but this is an early part of his life, and a lot of it involves his relationship with his brother, at least what I can tell from the trailers here.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of this concept, but they're doing what's called an origin story.
I used to prequels, but you know,
right? Yeah. So this is like a prequel to the rest of the stuff.
I see. All right. Well, I guess I'll buy it. Yeah.
But yeah, essentially, the long and short of it is this is set prior to Holmes meeting Watson, and it's set on the fictional island of Cordona, where Sherlock and his brother Mycroft's mother died while they were both very young, Sherlock being about 10 and Mycroft being about 10 years older than that. And Sherlock doesn't remember what happened and goes back to Cordona to try and figure out what happened. Mycroft, being a bit older, remembers exactly what happens and tries to get him to stop because it's not worth digging up the past. And then you spend 12 hours digging up the past, or 40 if you do all the side quests.
Awesome.
So wait, when does Uncle Ben die, and when do you get your spider powers? Oh. Like, that's the only origin story I know, and that's I need to see it.
So there's like a post-credit sequence where, yeah.
It
it's
all
weird.
Ties together.
It's all, yeah.
Everything
it's
is
MCU.
In the multiverse. Everything.
Exactly. Harry Styles actually plays Peter Parker
me.
In this.
He plays me. Okay. He plays Philippe. It's really crazy. Yeah. You see Harry Styles going into the recording booth to play Mycroft.
It's a brilliant performance, no doubt.
Thank you.
All right. Well, let's jump in the show and start the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happen in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by joining one of our awesome communities. We have a subreddit at 5x5dlc.reddit.com. We also have a Discord with great folks hanging out, talking about games. That is 5x5DLC on Discord as well. Urge you to take part. Really great folks in those places. But Philippe, you are our guest, so you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
Well, there are some great stories on this show sheet that you've sent me. But I think, unfortunately, we should probably start with the most important in terms of a human societal level and go with the report on Activision and Bobby Kotick's inaction in the sexual harassment suits that happened within the company.
Yeah. You know, I at this point, I'm so tired of even talking about this, but you're right. It is the biggest story of the week. It's just so depressing how awful Activision's topmost agents, topmost actors in this case behaved. The top of the top, of course, is Bobby Kotick, who is where the buck is supposed to stop, right? Made $150 million bonus last year, and you know, as CEO, has done some awful, awful things, according to this Wall Street Journal report. Of course, Wall Street Journal is reporting this. It is not confirmed, but the allegations within are, I mean, he's a monster. He's just a terrible, terrible human, it seems. And the fact that he hasn't stepped down by the time we've started recording this is quite shocking, actually. It just shows you.
Jeff, I'm sorry. Could you actually write that up and then give it to a woman to say? Yeah, and yeah. then could you actually come out later and then throw that woman's statement under the bus? The one that you wrote and you made her say?
I mean, there's some pretty awful stuff in here.
I feel like that's how
you
get your point across.
There's some pretty awful stuff in here. Some pretty terrible allegations. That one is not the worst. I think objectively the worst, but it certainly is the one that just, I think, is the most telling as to the kind of leader this dude is. If this is true that he, you know, wrote up the statement that was attributed to what's the woman's name? I don't even have it here. I apologize. Anyway, he wrote up a statement that was put out, signed by a VP, a woman at the company, to give the appearance that it was coming from a woman who later stepped down. He evidently authored the whole thing, and then later, as you said, just
Francis disavowed. Townsend, Francis F. Townsend.
Thank you for looking
was,
that up.
The EVP of corporate, or is, or was, and she, yeah,
pretty
she
awful.
Released the statement, and then Bobby came out later saying, "Oh man, that statement sure was tone deaf." And then it yeah. comes out now in this Wall Street Journal investigation. If you didn't understand the reference or you know dumb rapport I was doing with Jeff, dumb joke, and then so. Then Bobby comes out and says, our statement was tone deaf. We really missed the mark. And now this Wall Street Journal piece says that, no. Bobby wrote that original statement, signed her name to it, yeah. attributed it to her, and then later comes out and says, oof, yeah, she messed up. It's like, what the heck?
I mean, I don't know what – this is a big story. You're absolutely right, Philippe. I think we all are on the same page that this behavior is appalling and – unacceptable and frustrating to have in a hobby that we all love from companies whose products I think we've all loved at some point. So I don't know. I mean, what's your response to this, Philippe?
I think the thing that you said a moment ago, which I actually disagree with most, is when you said it's surprising that he hasn't stepped down. I perhaps am far too cynical. I don't think he will step down. I think that being a billionaire affords you certain I was going to say responsibilities, which it should, but it doesn't. It affords you certain get out of jail free cards, quite literally. And it is that thing of what can you say? And it feels banal, I suppose, to talk about it, and because it keeps coming up, and because, well, it's video games, these should be fun. And when it turns out that, you know, not to bring it back to Frogwares immediately, but one of the things that they were quite proud of with Sherlock Holmes Chapter One is the fact that they worked without any crunch. And I think that there is a systemic, perhaps, a deep-seated dislike of people who make video games within the companies themselves. So when it comes to working them too hard, when it comes to belittling them, when it comes to treating them like lesser than human beings, I feel like we see that all too often in video games. And you know, being a straight white man sort of makes you the slightly less or much less, in fact, prone to some of the awfulness that goes on. But I think you sort of see it, especially with people of color or people of the global majority, and women in particular, just constantly being. This is a family show, so being pooped on by the people above. And as you just said, Jeff, what can you say except this isn't right, this should change. Will it change? I don't think it will, and that's upsetting to me, but I don't think it will.
As you had mentioned, Bobby Kotick being a billionaire, I looked up, and what a weird result I find on Google. The first five results are Bobby Kotick's net worth is $600 million. Then the next one is, it says his net worth is $7 billion. And then there's one that says his net worth is $64 million, which seems wrong because he got $150 million last year. So nobody seems to know if he's actually a billionaire or not. At least the internet doesn't. Anyway, a very wealthy man, made a lot of money doing very horrible things. America.
But he is the star of Moneyball. So, yeah. You know, he's a movie star. Can we really blame him? I don't know. Yeah.
For folks who, you know, come to this show for the news, a couple of other allegations against him was, one, he actually was well aware of some of the bigger harassments and scandals going on at Sledgehammer and other Activision-owned studios, and actually intervened to a review on actions within those studios recommended the termination of an employee, and Bobby intervened and said, no, let's keep him. We're going to keep him on. That person didn't leave until they were reached out to by the Wall Street Journal. He threatened to kill women. He sexually harassed people himself personally within the company. It's, you know, a murderer's row of act. It's like, what would Bobby actually do? He didn't know about it. Yes, he did. Well, he didn't do it himself. Yes, he did. Well, it's not like he threatened to kill somebody. Yes, he did.
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, yeah, the threatening to kill somebody was a voicemail that he left 16 years ago. It was arbitrated in court. He apologized. I'm not defending it, but I don't think we should also characterize it as like, hey, for the last few years, Bobby Kotick has been threatening to kill people. You know, it's he's clearly a monster, as I said, but I don't think we should also, you know, paint a unfair picture, or not unfair, but I mean a wrong picture of what's
an
been going on recently,
picture,
you know,
at least with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We bring these stories up. We wring our hands. We hope for change. I don't know what else there is to do. It is so, so depressing to me.
Well, I said this in the Discord already. I wanted to let folks know there. It's not tons. It's not a lot. But you won't hear me talk about any Activision Blizzard game on this show until Bobby steps down or there's fundamental, real fundamental change at that company. And I know that's not. It's not, ooh, that's going to be the thing that finally forces Bobby out. But, and I might mention a game in passing, comparing it to another game, or if I don't know, it's, if a game is an Activision studio, I might unintentionally bring something up. But I'm not going to sit here and talk about the things they make. You know, and that stinks for the wonderful people who are there, who putting their blood, sweat, and tears into those products. But I can't sit here and be like, oh, Diablo Immortal's finally coming out. It's going to be. No. So I'm not going to do it. I want to shout out the, you know, hundreds of employees who put their careers on the line by signing the statement calling for his removal. I want to shout out the people on investors that have sent letters calling for his removal. I want to shout out the heads of Microsoft and Sony for at least addressing the issue and saying it's not okay. And hopefully there's fundamental change there. And then I want to negatively shout out all of the human beings on the Activision board who heard all of this stuff and were like, this is fine. Keep going, Bobby. I know Bobby has, I believe he has, you know, a large say within that board. But to all of those other individuals, shame on you. Shame on you, and hopefully things will change going forward.
Yeah, well, here's hoping. All right, Christian, what is your story of the week?
Well, I hope you're ready for things to get zany.
Oh yeah.
If you thought that was a story, do I have a story for you? I think to me that is the biggest story of the week. Like, hands down, what is going on with Activision is the biggest story of the week. I think is an interesting story, and one I want to talk about following up on last week's show, is GTA Trilogy Definitive Edition has now been the old edition, the undefinitive, the edition that does not definitive it, has been re-released on PC. And Rockstar came out and said, yeah, these are bad. The definitive edition is bad. We're sorry about these problems. Here's some things that are coming out soon, and there's going to be some bigger changes coming later. but also this original version.
This is the thesaurus edition to make a new definition. Or actually, the thesaurus would be the same definition.
The original games that we had just delisted are now back, baby, only on the Rockstar Store. They're not back on Steam, I believe, as of this recording. But the older versions of those games are now re-released as a bundle. And to anybody who bought the definitive editions, they get these older crappy versions, the older versions free.
It's like hilarious.
Six games for the price of three. This is fantastic. Yeah. This is the best deal in the history of video games. I don't know what you're being sarcastic about.
Yeah. I bought the omelet and it's terrible. It's terrible. Oh no, I know, sir. I know that the omelet is terrible. In exchange for that, you can have yesterday's omelet.
Which 2 weeks ago we said was bad. We said that it was no longer
took that
a
off
good
the market
omelet.
Because we're not going to sell yesterday's omelet to you. It's probably very cold. But yesterday's omelet, you please have that.
But you might get salmonella from today's omelet. So you probably want to go back and eat the other one if you're really hungry. I don't know.
We're fixing it, though. We put salt on it, and we have more fixes coming. But for now, there's salt on the omelet now. And
if you had been here yesterday, you could have gotten that omelet very inexpensively.
It's
You've
just
been around like 30 years ago when that omelet was first released.
Yeah, I know you were excited about the omelet we made today because we made it today and just like we got a whole bunch of new ingredients in there. But yesterday's omelet should be just fine.
The art direction on yesterday's omelet played on original pans cooked in original pans is really phenomenal. Testament to the hardware. I do think that this is, it's annoying that they're not relisted on Steam and other places, but I mean,
it's a novel solution. How many games? Imagine if Cyberpunk could have done that. Oh, you don't like the Cyberpunk that just came out? We'll just use the old Cyberpunk that we took down just recently. I mean, I'm sure everybody wishes they had that in their back pocket of like, no, this game is really buggy. You didn't want Fallout 76? Fallout 3? We'll give you that. How about that?
I do wonder, and Philippe, I'm curious, your thoughts on this. Like, we've had developers on this show. Let me tee it up a little bit. We've had developers on the show and we've talked about things like this before from folks who do mock reviews and stuff like that. And the general thought is like anything that players say about a game when it comes out, the devs knew. Like it's no surprise that it reviewed at a 7 or at a 6 or at a 9. Like there's mock reviews, devs and QA. They put in all this time. With that said, how does Rockstar Take-Two release this game and then immediately double back and apologize on it? Like what do you think was going on when this game came out to then now have to do all of this?
I mean, it's that simple.
Speculate what happened behind the scenes for Christian.
Philippe, you're an actor, right?
No.
Understand how video games are developed, don't you?
I'm just curious. Some wild speculation about how this
Christian,
happened.
Christian, it's like going to a Trader Joe's and buying some eggs, right?
Yeah.
And it's got to be that thing of just like, I won't be that bad. They won't hate it that much. It's the game. It's the game they wanted. They wanted these games. It'll be fine. And if all else fails, we'll just re-release the old ones. Nobody will care. Like that's gotta be it. It's just, that thing of somebody at Rockstar, because it's an external company that did the definitive edition, isn't it? And it's gotta be just somebody at Rockstar was just like, ooh, this is not good. You know that, right, friends? And they were just like, well, it's the best we could do in the time you gave us and the money you gave us. So let's release it now.
I'd like to think that the QA people at Rockstar were like, I've played this game so many times. I don't need to play it again.
I'd much rather play GTA 6.
Hasn't it already been ported to PC? Yes. Well, then it's fine. Yeah. How bad could it possibly be?
Yeah.
It's fine. I've played these games. They're so big and so long, and there's so much to test.
Skyrim comes out again this week, and I need to go play that.
Like, what do I want to know? Does the PC port
like 10 years ago, Carol? Yes, you did, Thomas. Well, then it's fine.
It's
why does the other team get to work on GTA 6 and I have to work on GTA 3 again?
Exactly.
Because Jim, you're the best at GTA 3. I don't want to be the best.
You're the best there ever was at GTA 3, Jim. You're the best there ever will be.
There's no GTA 6. That other team is still working on GTA Online, and they're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
No one has ever assured quality like you've assured quality, Jim. You're the best there ever was.
But to your point, Jeff, the wild thing, I think it was Digital Foundry did an excellent video. I think the only one I watched so far, maybe the only one they released, is about GTA 3, and they're kind of doing each of these definitive editions as their own video. But this definitive edition is based on the mobile port that came out 10 years ago or whatever it is. So it's not, it's built in Unreal. And so it's like a totally stripped down, re-engined port of a mobile. It's not the old PC version. It's so weird. And maybe that's the code that was most readily available or the easiest to upgrade. Like those old iOS mobile ports weren't heralded as great. And then, but for whatever reason, that was the backbone for these definitive editions going forward. And it didn't go well, right? Like it did not go well.
There are so many great games to play. Do we really care this much about these old games being re-released again? I mean, I know clearly people do, but there are so many great games to play right now. Like I'm drowning in incredible new stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's
like good because you don't have these anymore. You have the old ones.
I never had these. Yeah.
I downloaded San Andreas and then realized that the beginning was tapping repeatedly to ride a bike and was like, I'm going to delete this because I have the rest of Game Pass to play games.
When do you figure out how you lift weights in that game? I'm going to give you a hint. It's also tapping a button repeatedly.
Yes. I mean, to be fair, that is video games in general. So we can't be too...
Yeah, buttons, we can't buttons be tapped, you know? All right. You have given me far too many far superior stories, both of you, to talk about. And so I'm going to do multiple. I don't even care. The first I want to talk about, I want to talk about the Game Awards nominees. The Game Awards will be happening in just a couple of weeks, I believe. Jeff Keighley's Game Awards, big event in the video game world. I know Christian is not a fan, but that doesn't stop me from bringing it up every year. In fact, it encourages me to bring it up every year because I like watching him squirm. Let's talk just about the games that were nominated for Game of the Year, the top award. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 nominees this year for the Game of the Year. They are Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet & Clank, Rift Apart, and Resident Evil Village. Philippe, how many of these have you played, and do you have opinions on this list?
I have played one, and I think it's great.
Okay, which one?
You guess? I have Game Pass, so it's the game I played. Psychonauts 2 was fantastic. I thought it was...
Oh, Takes Two's on Game Pass. Just saying.
That's true, but you need two players.
You do.
My partner does not live with me, so whenever she's round, we're playing The Walking Dead, the old Telltale games. So that's what we play.
Whenever she's around, we're playing... Not video games.
You can play remotely, just so you know. Obviously she would need an Xbox of her own.
She'd need to care about video games in order for that to happen.
It's
one of those things where looking at this Game of the Year list, I super want to play Metroid Dread. Deathloop, I heard you both espouse the virtues of and thought sounded fantastic. I'm just going to wait until it's on Game Pass next year because I'm that guy. Ratchet and Clank, I don't have a PlayStation 5 yet. Resident Evil Village, I'm a giant baby. So I'm not going to play that anytime soon.
I think
there
are actual evil giant babies in that game.
That doesn't surprise me. Like 7 feet tall with hats, as far as I understand. Yeah. But I like speaking just for a moment on Psychonauts 2 because it's a game I only just completed. I think that's a heartwarming, brilliant, fantastic treatise on mental health and on being a good person and sort of the value of community and friendship. And if that won, I would think that would be a worthy video game to sort of herald as this in this year of all years, having a video game that tells you, hey, it's okay if you feel down or it's okay if you're slightly different.
to win Game of the Year, I think that would be worth it. But
I also think Psychonauts 2 is phenomenal, and I'm actually surprised that it made the list. I think that's kind of a win already for Psychonauts 2 to be on the Game of the Year list. Maybe I have the wrong perception of this, but it feels like the underdog here.
Definitely.
And kudos to Double Fine. I think Psychonauts 2 was highly anticipated. I think it was people, you know, have a lot of affection for the IP. That first game, you know, holds a place in a lot of people's hearts. But I don't know if anybody expected the sequel to be quite as good as it turned out. It's really an amazing year for platformers. Two platformers. You could argue maybe three platformers on. You could argue four platformers on this list. What is that? I mean, if you put Metroid Dread in a platformer category, you could argue four platformers of the six games. That's pretty wild.
How about you two? If you call Deathloop a platformer, that's another one.
I don't think I would, but
That's what I'm saying about Metroid. It's not a platformer. I was making a joke.
Well, it has platforms.
If you call them all platformers, I mean,
yeah, you jump, you move left and right. It's like Mario. That's what you guys wanted from me, right? To come on here and say that every game is like Mario, because that's what I'm going to do from now on.
Christian, what would you claim as the best game of the year, or what are your thoughts on this list?
Christian, what do you think is the clear front runner of these?
I don't care. I'm excited for some of the reveals at the reveal awards. Some of the ones I've heard about are going to be great. And I'm sure there's going to be other surprises. This list is meaningless to me, and I'm very excited to talk about our favorites of the year when we do that. And I'm super excited to see the fun reveals and announcements that Keely and Co. have at this show.
All right. Well, I will take the actual prompt and say I think Deathloop is the clear favorite. It seems to me. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm wrong. I would like to see a game. I think it's wonderful that there are games on here that are doing something a little bit different, or at least trying to do something a little bit different. I mean, Deathloop does something a little different, but it's a lot of murder simulator, F-bomb town. And it's wonderful that there are games on here that are a little less that same wheelhouse, that same, you know, tone. I think we get that, you know, that tone is a little exhausting. I think Deathloop is an excellent game, but it would hearten me, I think, if It Takes Two wins, which is my favorite of mm-hmm. this list. It Takes Two, I think, is a triumph and actually has a lot of heart and is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game. I mean, extraordinary achievement. I love that it made this list, and I'm rooting for It Takes Two.
I'd like to ask you a semi-serious question, Jeff. Like, what is it about these awards that make it worth discussing in this way, where we don't do this for IGN's Game of the Year nominees or any other? Is it because it's a multi-outlet disciplinary thing, or
it aims to be the premier award for our hobby, and I think how many millions of people watch these every year makes it I think it's a big deal. I think these are a big deal, and they're part of our industry that I think is a mistake to ignore.
Do you think that people are watching it for the awards, or do you think people are watching it for the reviews?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think that is relevant. I think it's all part and parcel. And, you know, if you're watching the Academy Awards for the outfits, you're still watching the Academy Awards, right? So I don't know. I think it's interesting. It's a bunch of people just, you know, it's games that get a boost in the same way. I mean, I think the Academy Awards are just as arbitrary and ridiculous. And I think that they're a big cultural touchstone that the Game Awards aims to be, and I think kind of already are in our industry. They are a touchstone. They are a point at which the entire industry looks in one place and looks at these games. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I really don't.
No.
I think if more people play It Takes Two because it's nominated for Game of the Year at the Game Awards, then that's a win, I think. Or Psychonauts 2, or, you know, any of these games.
I think it's just one of those things where I agree with you to an extent, where I'm just like, you know, I'm glad they exist for exactly this reason of just being like, oh, okay, I really definitely should check out Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart when I finally get a PlayStation 5, or, you know, that kind of stuff. I had Metroid Dread on my Christmas list. I'm going to move it up a little bit. But in terms of, I think I'm more on Christian's side of just like, I don't like looking at this list. I don't find it interesting, I guess, as a terms of a thing. And like, I'm super glad that somebody is trying to raise the prestige level of award shows and video games. And by aligning it with all the reveals, I think you definitely do get more eyes on it. But again, I don't necessarily see why it's worth discussing, I suppose.
All right. Well, then we'll discuss something that I do think is worth discussing and sorry, really, I think, important, interesting, and will have ramifications for the future. And that is that Phil Spencer, head of Xbox, supports emulation, or at least voiced his support to Axios. He has said, quote, "My hope, and I think I have to present it that way as of now, is as an industry, we'd work on legal emulation that allowed modern hardware to run any, within reason, older executable, allowing someone to play any game." Obviously, Microsoft has led the way on emulation of its back compatible, or its back library, and sort of forced a lot of the other platform holders to move along. I think without Microsoft's robust backwards compatibility strategy, you wouldn't see Nintendo or Sony moving quite as far as they have. But what about this? I mean, Spencer compares it to being able to watch a movie that was made anytime, right? It doesn't matter when the movie was made. If you can, you know, if you can get it on a format, there's something that'll play it. And it's about preserving these old things. He said movies, TV, and music. You don't, just because a piece of music was made, you know, a century ago, doesn't mean we shouldn't be able to listen to it now. Philippe, what's your feeling about that? I mean, obviously different companies have different ways of monetizing this thing, but what about emulation as something the industry embraces and thinks of as a natural progression for any IP?
Oh, fantastic. Absolutely the thing the video game industry should be doing. I have not a vested interest, but I studied anthropology at university and I find old things super interesting.
On this show, right?
Come
look at Jeff and I and be like, interesting.
We're super interesting now, Christian.
This is what like the old people are like.
Look, Philippe. It's coming for you.
I mean, honestly, if I look half as good as you guys in 40 years, is that? I'd be very happy. Do you know what I mean?
Philippe is 3 years old.
But I think with regards to emulation, it really does depend on how they're monetizing it. If it's going to be the Nintendo sort of, well, we're just going to re-release it on every platform and make you pay for it again, then I'm less interested in that. But if there is a way specifically for, I think Frank Cifaldi, is that the guy who works for the United States Library, I think, in order to like preserve old games? It's an ex games industry guy who works now with the government to try and preserve old games. And that to me is super worthwhile, because I want to be able to go and play Pong or play Super Mario Brothers, or, you know, all the different weird versions of something like Aladdin on the Genesis versus the Super Nintendo. You know, I want to be able to see the progression and chart a path for video games, because I think personally, like I get so much more enjoyment out of seeing where something came from, like playing an old, like to use Deathloop as an example, to be like, oh, okay, I see how they got from Dishonored to Dishonored 2 to Deathloop, or whatever the vampire game is coming soon. I love it. I think I'm so glad that Phil Spencer has said this, and I hope that, you know, the Xbox Series Z will do that in the future as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's less about his a specific pattern of or template going forward of how to monetize or the ways in which this monetizes. I think he's speaking in a more macro way of this paradigm shift of how IP holders think about their IP in the video game space. Because I think he's right that they don't think about it the way music companies or even TV and film companies think about their back catalogs, right? They don't think about it as this natural progression that you get to where people should be able to have these things accessible to them, right? I think you know, anybody that has the rights to old TV shows is thinking, how do I get these out to people? How do I get them to people? Especially with all the numerous streaming sites that we have now. And I don't think that's how old IP holders of video games think about video games. And I think I'm really excited that he's pushing for that kind of just different way of conceptualizing what happens to a video game when the hardware to run it has been replaced. You know, once that happens, it feels like these things just get, you know, unless it's a top tier, you know, IP or game, a lot of these games just get forgotten about or get abandoned. And to think about it in a new way, to change the way the industry conceptualizes back catalog, I think is a really laudable effort. What's your take, Christian?
Yeah, I think Phil just watched the Modern Vintage Gamers piece on how the Xbox Series S is an emulation beast and was like, oh, yeah, we have, which is it's an older video now at this point, but it's great. And also the Series S is a great little box. I love it. I love the idea of it. I think it's a little hard to compare it to music or movies in just that it's not the same thing, right? It's not a read file. It kind of requires input. And is emulation the same as original hardware and what's lost in how that's played today? But I think if a console or thing is powerful enough to emulate it properly, and you're getting that as intended gameplay experience, of course, I love the idea of being able to do that, and of companies, you know, looking to make their games accessible. But at the same time that he had this interview with Axios, I think it was also interesting that after the 20th anniversary celebration that Microsoft had, and they did, 70 more games backwards compatible, and a whole bunch of other games got frames boost and auto HDR and stuff like that. But after that announcement, which one I should pause here, that is awesome. They've made a commitment to bring more games to the back catalog. It's great. I love that they did it. But when they made that announcement, they also said, that's going to be the end. We're not doing any more. And the reason is software, licensing fees, like basically all of the things that make it hard to do. And so I think Phil Spencer's mind is in the right place, but I think you also see at Microsoft the difficulty of actually doing it.
What he's speaking to, right? He's trying to like send a message to the industry, like, let's make this less difficult.
Yeah, and I think licensing and then the idea of playability, you know, like Mister and Analog, and you're seeing these like ways to get an authentic emulated experience. But it is interesting, but music and movies, I don't think are quite the same because it's kind of just a read file that, you know, gets put out on a new thing and then is available somewhere. And even there, I mean, I think it was Igby Goes Down, I think is now on HBO in a few places. It's a movie I particularly love. And it wasn't on stream. You know, like, there are still weird things in that also. And then to the licensing side of it, that makes it difficult. And I think you're seeing the reaction to it some now with like Taylor Swift releasing her own versions because she doesn't like where her catalog is owned. So she's releasing Taylor's versions. And then, but now, was it Universal? I forget. Some large music group has made it the time in which artists get their catalog back or are able to re-record if you sign with this major label even longer because they don't want artists to do what Taylor Swift is doing. Like, there's always going to be that balance that I think is going to make this harder than it is. But conceptually, I love it, and I hope we see more of it.
Christian, as a practicing lawyer, do you know...
Yes, thank you.
Do you know how copyright applies to video games?
Typically, it's owned by the company because their work's made for hire. As a practicing lawyer who is giving authentic and... Man, I'm going to get double disbarred. No, but it's owned by the company, right? And it's a work made for hire, so the company owns that copyright. And then when you see like bankruptcies, that's the other thing that happens. A lot of these companies go out of business, and it's like, well, who owns
right.
I don't know, Digital Eclipse, still a company? I don't know, whatever. Some of these old Acclaim, who owns Acclaim's catalogs, and where did those fall? And someone bought some of these out of this, that, or the other. Indie games, you know, it's a singular person sometimes for some of them, but it's a work made for hire. But even then, that gets complicated to some extent, and you're seeing it with Marvel properties now, where people, you have an air quote, I'm summarizing, simplifying a whole bunch. We have a right to say, I want this back. This is mine again. But Disney has really been lawyering up to be like, no,
yeah,
you don't get it back again. It was a strict work made for hire. It is ours forever.
I just wonder what would happen when the copyright expires on something like the first Super Mario Brothers game, or, you know, the first Legend of Zelda or something like that, if that's when you start to see, because I mean, obviously music and theater especially have been around for, well, yeah, because they'll continue to, but I wonder if there's some kind of, like, the fact that music and live performance or art used to be, well, has been around for so long. And because they were this ephemeral art, I just wonder if it's what it will take is video games to stop being developed as a quote unquote product and be developed as a quote unquote piece of art. And then that's when you'd start to see this not homage, but this protecting of the older catalog. I don't know. I wonder if that's the dichotomy.
Outside of the catalog, you know, the idea of, and Disney again is fighting this, you know, tooth and nail as well, but it's the character that would go away, not necessarily the game first, but, like, you know, the variations we've seen on, I don't know, famous historical fictional characters over the years, and people being able to do new takes on them because they're not they're not owned by an IP holder anymore. And whether that, you know, Dracula and some of these things, you know, that is the point of copyright lapsing, is to allow for further creative expression.
But that era is over.
It does seem like it is over.
It's just because people back then weren't savvy enough to understand. Now we have teams and armies of lawyers working on that problem. It's just never going to happen again. There's never going to be a point at which Mickey Mouse becomes in the public domain. It's just not going to ever happen. I think it will. I guess let us live long enough to see.
Yeah, we'll be all long right. dead. Our kids will do a podcast about it.
We do need to check in on a newly recurring segment about the delays that are constantly happening. It's a segment I like to call Jeff Was Right.
Jeff was right, and it really pisses Christian off that Jeff was right, and it really pisses Christian off that Jeff was right, and it...
Because he was right.
Everything is delayed.
Jeff was right.
That's right, everybody. Jeff was right. Our new reoccurring segment with a brand new bumper from Sean Madigan, the king. The king of bumpers.
That smashed middle it. Part. Like, I know I can't sing, but then I hear what Sean can do, and I'm like, Jeff and I should start a band. Like, that's good. It's
we
so good, Sean.
Start
it's
a
so
Sean
good.
Madigan taking our voices and making magic. incredible. Thank you, Sean. As always, the king of bumpers. This week's edition of Jeff Was Right features a delay for Saints Row from February 25th, 2022 to August 23rd, 2022. So that's a big delay. And Halo Infinite, did you want to play the campaign in co-op?
Well, I'd love to.
You knew you were going to have to wait. You couldn't do it at launch. Guess what? It's even later, everybody. Hey, at least May 2022 before the December 2021 released campaign will be playable in co-op. That is a massive bummer, I think. Although, hey, I guess the silver lining is maybe you go and revisit that campaign that you already played 6 months ago with a friend when you can play it in co-op.
Oh, odd you didn't mention Sifu, Jeff.
Sifu did the opposite. Sifu moved up to February 8th. I believe they were end of February. February is going to be so much fun to watch as we get closer to it. It's a massive game of chicken right now. Obviously, Saints Row has already moved out of that February window. Sifu's like, hey, I'm going to get up. I'm going to get out there before everybody. I'm going to be one of the
you can
first
beat our
February
game before
games.
Horizon comes out. You can beat our game before Elden Ring. Yeah, we can come out
you're,
early.
Are you excited about February? Let us be the game you're excited about first. Anyway, the Halo news is super bummer to me, but
and Forge is part of that delay as well. The at least
Yes.
You know, 6 months later, or I think after that. And they tied it to the extension of the season, first season, and we got multiplayer early, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And so because season one is longer, this stuff's coming later. And yeah,
I loved in the notice from them when they were just like, well, we said it was coming with season two, and season one is longer now. So technically, we didn't lie to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought Halo Infinite was just a cool title. And now I realized it was a hint all along of how long it's going to take for everything to come to you. Anyway, that's our new Jeff Was Right segment. Maybe my new favorite bumper of all.
It's so good.
I'm so honored to have been here for the inaugural Jeff Was Right segment. This is fantastic.
You're right. You will go down in infamy when they put us in the museum. Yeah.
Next week?
Yeah, exactly. I need to thank our first sponsor now, Made In. You heard me talking about Made In last week because we have a nonstop parade of in-laws coming into my house. My mom was here last week. Now my wife's dad and stepmom are here, and then my dad is coming next week, which means there's a lot of food being prepared in my house, which means I'm using my Made In nonstick saucepan almost nonstop. And it is it's the only pan I will use. We have a number of pans in my house. I won't touch them anymore. after the Made In nonstick saucepan. Why? Because it actually doesn't stick. It's super high quality. And if you're like me, the holidays is when you keep reaching for cookware, knives, you know, things that you need, and you remind yourself, oh my gosh, I've been meaning to replace that for a while now. It's outlasted its usefulness. Well, let me tell you, it's a perfect time to upgrade your cookware, to cook like professional restaurant quality items with restaurant quality items, because Made In cookware creates quality kitchen tools that you should invest in. These are products used by thousands of the world's best chefs. And if quality and craftsmanship is important to you, check out Made In. Like I said, I refuse to use any pan at this point that isn't my Made In nonstick saucepan. I'm not exaggerating that. You can ask my wife. I have a special drawer where it goes, where none of the other pans go, so I know always where it is. These are made professional quality. Cookware, knives, these are made for people who love to cook, and they source the finest materials and partner with renowned craftsmen to make those premium kitchen tools available directly to you without the markup. These are products made to last. How do you know? Well, they have a lifetime guarantee. Their cookware distributes heat evenly and can easily go from the stovetop to the oven. Their knives are fully forged, perfectly balanced, and stay sharp. And they have over 28,000 five-star reviews. The products are used by some of the world's best chefs at Michelin-starred restaurants around the world. You got to try these out. So do yourself a favor. Go to madeincookware.com/DLC. Use promo code DLC, and you can get 15% off your first order. That's Made In Cookware, madeincookware.com/DLC, and promo code DLC at checkout for 15% off. Philippe. Well, I know one of the things that's on your playlist. It's the biggest thing that came out. In fact, Christian knew it and pointed it out last week that as we were releasing our episode, there was a huge rumor that Halo Infinite's multiplayer was going to drop early as a surprise, many leaks were happening. poor 343 was, I saw a bunch of tweets how mortified they were that everybody knew it was going to be this big surprise. It ended up being a pretty cool surprise. You've been playing Halo Multiplayer Infinite. Nope. Stop that. Reverse it. You've been playing Halo Infinite Multiplayer, as has Christian, as have I. What is your take, Philippe, on the new free-to-play Halo multiplayer?
It's fantastic. I don't know what else to say about that. I really got into Halo 3 multiplayer, however long ago that was. Loved it. And back in the 360, I guess. God, that feels like a long time ago. And playing this now, it feels like it's a thing that you both have talked about before, where it feels like your memory of that thing, and then you go back and play the old thing, and you're like, oh, this doesn't look or feel anywhere near as good as I remember it doing. And this feels fantastic. I'm enjoying the quite small maps, they feel like to me. I don't know about the two of you, but you know, having a four-person team, eight people total, like I've been spending the last year actually playing a lot of Call of Duty Modern Warfare, because I wanted to do something that felt social without leaving my house. And now playing this, I'm like, oh, I don't have to play something that's made by a garbage company full of garbage people. At least in this company, if there are garbage people, they have not come to light yet. I suck
ever
at
the
it.
Optimist.
I do want to put that out there. I do suck at it. I thought I was doing fantastic in a game the other day. I played a few matches, was getting like, you know, 10 kills for 20 deaths or something. And then the next game, next time I switched, signed on, I went down, I pressed the button and started playing. And I was like, holy wow, I have killed 20 people with one death. I am doing incredibly, until we got to the end of the game and it said 343 343 343 bot 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 bot. And I was like, oh, I do still suck at this game. But yeah, how about you, Jeff? What are you feeling about it?
You know, this isn't really my genre. The first-person shooter multiplayer is not something I'm drawn to much anymore, unless it's a co-op experience. But I dipped my toe in. I played a few matches, and I had some fun, man. I used to play Halo back in the day, back in my younger Twitchier days when I could hang. I could barely hang then, let's be honest. I was having fun. I think they've done a great job making fun really accessible, really fast, mm-hmm. and really immediate. And it does feel like the old, those old Halo games. There's a lot of kind of new fun stuff to explore. The new gadgets that I haven't really experienced much in Halo multiplayer, just because I haven't played much of it. But yeah, the game looks great. Super ultra wide's awesome on it. I guess I had to mention that. But yeah, Christian, I'm sure you have more cogent thoughts than I. I jumped in, I had some fun, and jumped out and went, I'm gonna go back to Forza.
I really like it. It is a bummer that it was leaked, because what a megaton drop, right? Like, and we've talked about
this.
Yeah,
you got to imagine them like rubbing their hands together, like, oh, wait till they get a load of this. It's gonna be super surprising. And then, you know, everybody, you on a podcast are like, I think it's happening today. You know, everybody knew. But
yeah,
still cool.
Yes, it's still very cool and available everywhere. Like the Steam release, like the rumor was like, maybe it's just for Game Pass Ultimate. Maybe, you know, like they want to juice this or juice that. And it's everywhere. You can download it on Steam for free and play it. And as Jeff said, it works great in super ultra wide. 343 has really captured that feeling of Halo. And I think the maps for non-big team battle, which is, I haven't played as much big team battle. It's not my favorite mode. I talked about that on the beta. When we talked about it back in the beta, I guess this is still technically a beta, but you know what I mean. They feel properly sized. There was a time when, you know, we had older maps like Blood Gulch and stuff like that, that were larger, and there are some larger things here, but I feel like some of the Halos went through a, let's make this bigger, and it's still 4v4, and there was kind of not as interesting play areas. And I think these maps so far, and I'm not the person who best understands the meta of each one of these maps, but you feel the control points. They work well for Slayer and Oddball and Capture the Flag, and they have those natural ebb and flow to them. And then also where the power items come in, I love that the timing is there, and I don't need to be like, all right, Philippe, you're on rocket, count us down. And you have one person on your team who's just like staying in the background like 10, 11, so rockets up. You know, you can see that all that stuff is on the UI in the game now. And even just the general weapons in the, you know, weapon cabinets there, you can see when someone's picked it up, when it's going to be coming back. On top of that, you have the announcer saying like, power item available, you know, overshield available, overshield coming soon. And it can pull the focus of a match to a certain part of the map, because if someone's able to get those power items, it can really swing things. And I think that's super interesting in the non-straight Slayer varieties, because if it's straight Slayer, then okay, the fight just kind of goes that way. But if it's Oddball, which I think is my favorite right now, you know, it's like, oh, do I risk running over there, or better yet, sending two people over there to get an overshield or a rocket launcher or whatever it is, and then come back over and try to take out the person carrying the ball? Or do we just stay on the person carrying the ball because we have them alone and we're going to be able to take this and then bring it back to our, you know, air quote control point, or, you know, your defensible place? I think it's really interesting and fun. I love the run speed, the way it plays out in multiplayer. It feels faster, but it's not significant. You know, you get like the whoosh on screen of the lines, but you're not sprinting. It's a, you know, your Spartan is now jogging in a way that's fun. But when you have dash or, oh gosh, what's the real name for the zip line?
Like the grappling hook?
Yeah, the grappling hook. Like that adds so much more mobility, because that is appreciably faster than your jog, than your sprint. And so that adds mobility around the map in really fun ways. And then again, Oddball, my favorite mode. When you are carrying the ball, that slows you down more, but your ability to drop it, you know, so if someone gets on you, you drop it, you get a little bit of your mobility back, you get your weapons back, you take that out. It's a really, really fun and clever dance that I think this game nails. And I love, it feels like a blanket, but I love a shield. I love having my shield. Mm-hmm. Like so many games moved away from that approach, and like other shooters, you can just get wrecked in a couple of shots from across the map and you're down. And that's not to say that a more skilled player won't kill me every time in Halo, but I have that moment of like, I'm getting shot, I have a chance to react. Where in a lot of other shooters, I don't know where I'm getting shot from. Mm-hmm. I die before and like that's why games, I think, introduced a kill cam, because it's like, we know you'll never see where this comes from unless we show you. And the shield on Spartans, you know, you get a little bit of that dance, and maybe you can run away and your shield can recharge and you can come back. It feels like a nice amount of sponge to each one of these Spartans in the multiplayer. I've played on my Series S and my Series X, and it feels great on both. My only nits with it, and I think they're fixing it. They've already kind of fixed it. That battle pass progression is a slog. It is.
Yeah, they've definitely already addressed a lot of that. I think a lot of it's going to change, which is
interesting. They did one fix that I don't think is enough. And people were kind of harping about that on the beta, at the, you know, earlier beta as well. And they've talked about now that they're going to do bigger changes to it. And it's hard, I think, to get that right balance. I think Fortnite does it really well. It's easy to say the game that makes all the money has, you know, has all, and all their employees are working on it, does this really well. But I think they really do. And Halo's Infinite isn't there yet. It's not even not quite there. Like, it's a ways off.
Pretty cool. And how I think fast that, they responded, though. I'm heartened by that. Days. Yeah.
Yes. And I hope it does go somewhere. I think the issues they have are, one, the slog of it, and two, the rewards. I'm curious how far out there they'll go with skins and armor pieces and stuff like that. Cause a Spartan is a Spartan is a Spartan to some extent. And like Fortnite, it's like, now you have Rick from Rick and Morty. Now you have Harley Quinn. Now you have Obi-Wan, you know, like they go places. And Destiny, I think, did a good job carving out super unique armor types. And Halo Infinite has already shown that samurai armor type. And so maybe they will really go places, but I'm curious how desirable, like, okay, it's a slog, and if I do this, I get a slightly less round visor? Like, is that the thing that pulls me through? And then the other side of that coin, why I think it's worth talking about, as long as I'm talking about it, is because it is free to play, mm-hmm. when you end a match now, that is the thing front and center. You end a match and it shows you your XP. The first thing you see is your XP you got to move you up to the next level in progression. It doesn't give you a big kill death screen. I actually like the way that individual kill death is like the third screen over, because it prioritizes being helpful within the match, the type of match you're playing first. But that first thing you see is that XP thing, because that's the thing that's going to make this game money. And I'm super curious if that keeps people engaged, or if it works as somewhat of a negative reinforcement of like, oh, I thought I was just playing this game to have fun, but I guess I need to grind for this battle pass. And I'm curious how they do it. And then my only other nit that I won't spend a lot of time on is just, I think Battle Royale games really nailed the flow of games now in a big way. And we talked about this years ago, I think, about how once that quits being air quote fun, you start a new game and you're back having fun. And in Halo, the matches are much shorter than Battlefield 2042, for example, but it still is the case of I'm getting pounded and this match is not over. You know, yeah. Like, is this fun? And it doesn't have the downtime. Battle Royales have downtime where I can be like, I'm having fun. I'm hitting a rock because no one's shooting me. I'm having fun. I'm exploring this area because that's how the match is built. And Halo, you need to be on at all times. Like, I'm never sitting back, you know, playing. It's, oh, crap, oh, crap, oh, crap. But it's a different genre.
I think part of it as well is the respawn times, because I can't tell if it's different in different modes, because I definitely noticed at first when we started playing on Monday that it's 10 seconds and that feels like a long time to respawn. But there were some modes where it feels like maybe 3, 4, 5 seconds and it feels way faster. And those I have much more fun with, because I'm like, okay, I died. It's fine. I'm back in 3 seconds. Whereas the one where it's 10 seconds, I'm just like, all right, cool. I suck. I get it. Come on. Let's let me try again, please.
I haven't noticed that. I wonder if that's CTF, because I mean, I feel like that death timer, right, is to incentivize or disincentivize a certain style of play. And Slayer, it's like, who cares? Get back out there. But I don't know. And I should have probably looked, but that's interesting that you bring up, because I could see CTF wanting to deprioritize
running and gunning
or make this the penalty for dying higher.
Yeah, that's definitely how it feels. And I wonder if you will see a lot of skins when the game comes out and they suddenly are like, oh, we didn't want to tell you, but there's this type of Spartan who looks like something else. Or, you know, if there's going to be so much more of that stuff in that game that they just don't want to reveal yet. Because I assume there's got to be more maps coming on launch day as well, right?
I don't think so. I mean, there's only four or five maps. I think that stuff is planned, but I don't think it's coming soon.
Whatever the case, I think that releasing it as a free-to-play module and standalone module was a genius move. I just think it brings so many more people into the game to just give it a shot. That
I'm curious how it monetizes for them, though. Like,
yeah, I mean, I'm sure
we'll buy Halo Infinite or Game Pass next month.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. But I think that it brings up their overall numbers, and it just makes Halo much more sort of in the zeitgeist, which is probably going to work out positive for them, net positive. Philippe, what else is on your playlist?
Well, I'll save Forza Horizon 5, because I see that you've got it on yours, and I want to talk with you a little bit about that. But honestly, I've been playing a lot of Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1 and The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles this week, because I can't get enough of Sherlock Holmes or Herlock Sholmes, depending on which game you're playing. No, it's weird playing a game that you're in, especially when like something like Mycroft is, or a character like Mycroft is towards the latter half of the game, he sort of pops up. And so I don't know any of the stuff that's happening right now, and it's a weird experience to be like, oh well, I know where this has to lead, but right now I'm about to put an elephant on trial. This is insane. And yeah, have either of you played The Devil's Daughter or any of the previous Sherlock Holmes game by Frogwares?
I have not.
The tiniest amount, and then my kids were not into it, and I was like, this is gonna be fun, and I tried to show them, you know. And the Ace Attorney was the same thing. I was like, look, here, and my oldest, who's reading, is like, no.
This is too much like school, dad. Yeah, so it's basically, it's a deduction game. You go around, you talk to people, you deduce things about their personality and who they are and their backgrounds. And then people will come and present you with cases to solve. And for example, there's one where that elephant case that I just mentioned. You go to a neighbor's house and you find him dead. You find lots of giant elephant paw marks on the ground and a busted down gate. And you're like, well, I guess an elephant did this and then ran away. And then
it was Snuffleupagus.
But and then you go and you chase him into the forest, and he goes into a pond, and you're scared of water, so you can't swim after him, so you have to wait for him to come out. And the thing about these games, or this game at least in particular, that I'm really enjoying about it, it has some very, not bizarre, but like, it's funny. It's like Twin Peaks style funny. If either of you ever watched Twin Peaks and enjoyed that sense of humor, then this is that kind of a thing where you're like, is this meant to be funny? Am I meant to find it amusing that there's an elephant that we could potentially put in a noose? Like, what is, there's a lot of very strange stuff. Yeah, it is. It's very dark. But it is funny, and it's enjoyable because I am a huge Sherlock Holmes fan. So like playing the quote unquote origin story, like I'm not necessarily sure that it's a necessary story to be told. But that being said, the fact is, I think they've made a very fun game that is weird and funny and has some excellent voice acting. So I don't know. I think it's just one of those things where I think it's been taking up a lot of my time. Whenever I don't feel like something super fast paced and engaging like Halo, where I can just go and wander around and talk to some new people, present some new evidence to people, maybe put on a different outfit and try talking to people again and seeing if they respond to me better as a policeman or as a bohemian artist or something like that, then it's a very methodical approach which I'm quite enjoying, as opposed to something like even The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, which is another series that I love the Phoenix Wright game so much, but those, you're very much on a very set path, and it's like, okay, well, you present evidence at this point, and then you do this, and then you read this, and you read this, and you read this, and then you win the case. Whereas with this, it's like, no, there's an open world. You can go and talk to anyone. And yeah, I mean, it's an indie game, so you know, it's not going to be a GTA level open world.
Might be a GTA
it's,
definitive edition.
It's exactly
puts
that.
Puts that game to shame.
I in that you can buy it and run it.
Yeah, you can buy it and run it. But one, to pull a Philippe, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. When you talked about landing this gig, that's so awesome and super exciting. Like, you know, I will heap your own heap praise on you as you're being too modest to do it yourself. Like, you're forever tied to this character. It's so cool, man. Like, you are part of Sherlock Holmes forever.
Yeah, I thought it was Mycroft, but it's your Croft.
But it's awesome, and I think, and I've yet to play this game, but I think as the end of the year crunch comes on for a lot of people, I would want to shout this game out based on the reviews I've read and my knowledge generally of it, for folks who really liked Hitman 3 and maybe the killing in Hitman 3 was their least favorite part. Like, if you loved the second level of Hitman 3 until you had to push someone off a balcony or throw a banana at their head, however you killed them, this game and its ilk and others like it really fill that role really, really well. And I think a lot of people, you know, played Hitman 3 at the beginning of the year and loved it. And there aren't a lot of other games that do it where you're allowed to kind of explore. Cause like you said, yeah, Ace Attorney, whatever that game is, the Great Ace Attorney Chronicles, right? It's much more linear, and the way that this Sherlock Holmes game presents the world to people gives them that sandbox to go and play, and much in the same way that Hitman did in those vignettes. And I think
I really misjudged Sherlock Holmes. I did not know he killed that many people.
No. He just, what Sherlock Holmes does is he gets him into a place where he could kill him, and then goes, Could have killed ya. And then leaves.
Classic, I mean, Sherlock.
That's how he becomes so clever at figuring out crimes. He's like, here's what I do in this situation.
Yeah. It's like Dexter. He was the first Dexter. Yeah.
I mean, Sherlock's book, If I Did It, was a...
All right. I want to talk about a game that is not new. It came out this year, but a while ago. I think it came out during the summer. I missed it, but I've been trying to play some games that I think might be interesting for the end of year discussion. And this is one I had been meaning to try. I'm playing it on Steam. It's called Stonefly. Have either of you guys heard of this? It's an indie game, narrative, but very difficult to describe. Stonefly. Basically, you play a young girl who gets in her dad's mech. Except these are not mechs like you've ever experienced before. They're mechs that are sort of modeled after insects or plants, I guess. The first one you jump in is very much a dandelion seed. You know how you pick up a dandelion and you can blow it and it floats through the air? That's how the mech operates. And you're hopping around on tree branches and leaves and interacting with bugs and critters. You're mining resources and trying to not get knocked off the leaves by the critters. And in fact, knocking them off the leaves. The combat system in this game, such as it is, isn't really combat. It's just trying to gently nudge these little critters off the leaf that you're on so they fall off and don't bother you anymore, which I think is pretty clever. And you eventually get a number of different tools in order to do that better. But you're kind of knocking them onto their backs and then shooting gusts of air to blow them in certain directions, trying to knock them off the leaves. All of it very clever, all of it very unique and novel. I've never experienced a game quite like this. The closest game that comes to mind, in fact, a game tonally that felt very similar, is one of my favorite games of all time, and that is Pixel Junk Eden. Pixel Junk Eden, I love, and it feels kind of similar to that game. I mean, this is a much more, 3D sort of fully, Pixel Junk Eden is abstracted and line art and all that stuff. This is very much a girl in a mech and you're top down and it's stylized to a certain extent, but a very different looking game than Pixel Junk Eden. But tonally, the way you're kind of interacting with nature and the way it feels almost like a Zen state, jumping between these different petals, Pixel Junk Eden can get pretty frustrating, but for the most part, it feels like this kind of serene, meditative experience, and so does Stonefly, until you get to the point where you just have to grind for materials, because the game, in order to upgrade your mechs and get new mechs and get new things, you need a bunch of materials, and you have to sort of redo these missions over and over again to get materials, and then it becomes a slog. Which is unfortunate, because I think the game is so novel and interesting mechanically, like what you're doing, how you're playing. I also think that the way the narrative is expressed is a little clunky and tedious. Pacing doesn't feel great. But when I'm actually playing the game, when I'm actually jumping around and piloting the mechs, the controls are beautifully designed because they're expressing a series of verbs that no other game really does. I mean, it is truly very different from any other game I've played, just mechanically, just what you are asked to do and how you operate the mech and how they behave just doesn't really work like any other game. And the simplicity with which they're able to express that and how intuitive it becomes is quite an accomplishment. And I think Stonefly is a really interesting, novel, unique kind of experience that too few games are. And it bums me out that it's a little too rough around the edges to really warrant me, screaming from the rooftops about it. But I think it is interesting and certainly a game that fans of indie games and stuff that's not like everything else should be aware of. It's called Stonefly.
Did you play the previous game, Creature in the Well?
I did not. I heard good things about it.
I loved that game. I met those two at GDC. In fact, the same last time I saw you. So that must be, what, 3 years ago or something.
I
loved that game so much. But I ran into the exact same problem that you're describing now, where about halfway through, it kind of felt like a slog. And the narrative is kind of obtuse. And I love the mechanics of that game.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to check out Stonefly like you for the last 6 months or so that it's been out. And I'm heartened to hear that it's interesting, but disappointed as well that it maybe doesn't pull
off. It's not a home run, but I think it's like a solid triple. You know, it's pretty good.
Baseball. You know what doesn't get weighed down in the middle of it? Forza Horizon 5. That game keeps going from start to there is no end.
All I want to play, man. It's all I want to play. I like, if I have 15 minutes, I'm going to hop in on Forza Horizon 5. I really, really enjoy it. I unlocked my DeLorean this week.
What? I'll be honest.
So good.
I'll sit down to play Halo, and then Forza will be like, what are you here to play? And I'll be like, you're right. I'm here to play you.
There's a funny article, I think it was on Kotaku, that was like, Forza Horizon is a nightmarish hellscape where all the people have to escape the marauding vehicles. It was like the only places people are on tops of buildings or behind indestructible fences because they're so terrified of the vehicles that crash through every building in town. You know, I thought that was pretty funny.
Nice text. I think it's in game. Maybe one of those front splash screens, or maybe it was a pretend. I think it didn't, but it's like, you know, they worked with like the Mexico Cultural Heritage Foundation, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's also like, please don't drive through them.
It does remind me of just like, I wouldn't want to live in Paradise City, I don't think, just of all the places in the world.
Do you know where you are?
Am I in the jungle? You
in the jungle, baby? Yeah. You're going to die.
Oh, no.
Because a car is going to run
I'm so
you
much
over.
Younger than both of you. How can I be the one who's about to
evidently
die?
40 years younger than us is my understanding.
Because Philippe, I'm launching this Ford Bronco two-door off the edge of a volcano, and I'm going to land somewhere in the middle of the jungle where you happen to be out, you know, exploring.
I
see.
Oh, dude, yeah. I unlocked the I've been doing my unlocks in a very weird way, but I unlocked the festival one where you do the dirt racing. And I hadn't really done any dirt racing yet. And I'm like, oh, I love dirt racing. It's so much fun. It's so much fun. Cause it's like, there's way more jumps and goofy stuff. I like the goofy stuff. You know me. I've discovered a love for pure street racing with this game that I hadn't really experienced before, but man, I love the goofy stuff. I like wacky jumps. I like, you know, smashing through things. There's a thing called the great fun something or other. I don't know if you guys did this race, the great fun drive or something like that. Anyway, it's literally a race that you can pick up on the over map that like makes you drive through all kinds of wacky stuff. It, like, stuff is exploding and confetti is popping out of everything and you're hitting bowling pins and jumping through targets. And I was like, yeah, thank you, Forza Horizon. Thank you for understanding my particular kink.
Yeah, I am exactly on that wavelength. For me, it's like the thing I find hardest is the braking. I don't love the braking part when it's like, oh, you need to brake to go into a corner. I'm like, why don't I just drift around it? That seems way more fun.
Yeah.
But the only nit I have to pick with this game, because I like you said last week, I think, Jeff, like it really has filled that burnout paradise sized hole in my life. Like there are a couple of races, which I think there's one called like the Goliath or something, which is
Colossal.
Yeah, maybe it's that. And it's like 20 minutes long. And I'm just like, if I won, but I think it might be like sort of pushing you to win, because I'm just like, imagine if you came second in that by 0.1 of a second. And you're like, well, I guess I have to do another 25 minutes of that same track.
See, you should never come in second, though, because you just rewind.
This is true. This
when
is
you
true.
Blow like, a could turn, you, I, take
yeah.
it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also,
if you did come in second, and I don't know this race, I imagine I've done it. I don't, but if you come in second, the game would still be like, congratulations. And you'd be like, yes.
Oh,
thank
yeah.
you, game.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've never felt bad. You came in sixth. Oh, wow. That sounds awesome. You're the best. I was like, how many people were racing? Six people. I was like, whoa, that sounds really great.
Here, spin this wheel. Get some pants. I needed new pants.
I want these pants. Yeah. It's cool, man.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
It's a great game. It is. I never thought. I mean, I was looking forward to it. I was excited because I like pretty graphics, and I was like, I'm going to love pretty graphics on this game. But I did not anticipate how much I would want to be sitting down to play it every day. I get excited. I just hop on for a few minutes, do one quick race. I like that you can pop in and pop out. And somebody emailed me. Let me find it. To point out one of the reasons that I like it. This was Marcos wrote this. He said, listening to your Forza Horizon 5 discussion this week podcast, I was agreeing with everything you were saying, but there's one thing that I think makes the biggest difference for me compared to the last Forza Horizon games. Load times. He said, going from what felt like a 2+ minute loading screen when doing anything at all on previous games to loads being practically instantaneous is truly a game changer. Not wrong. And I think that's one of the things that leads me to be able to jump in and just do one quick race and jump out. I don't feel like it's a chore to load up the game. It just feels like, oh, I'm in, I'm out, I'm popping around, boop, boop, boop. Pretty cool.
And as you love to mention, and I think it's worth highlighting, how dang cool is it that Microsoft's two big, air quote, console exclusives run phenomenally well on PC?
Yeah.
With ultra wide support, with all those bells. It's not like, and it's also on PC, kind of. It's like
a
dang good PC port.
I've been almost like exclusively playing on PC, you know, almost exclusively. Sorry, go ahead.
That's cool.
Yeah. And it's wild that they both are coming out right, you know, boom, 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 right back to back. And we'll see if it bolsters any Xbox purchases, you know, any sales.
You can't get them.
You can't get it. That's a good point. So it's good that they're on PC, you know?
Anyway. Oh, and they did this at, I know these games are cross-gen, and they apparently, again, per Digital Foundry, I rely on their expertise, but play well on old hardware, on the One Series hardware.
Yeah.
But they also just released, for Game Pass Ultimate subscribers, xCloud via console.
Right.
Which is awesome. So now if you have a Xbox One, you can play the medium. And some of these, you know, the rare few series console exclusives are available streaming, assuming you're streaming, you know, you have good infrastructure for that. But that's
so cool.
Microsoft is firing on all cylinders right now. It's really exciting to see.
Literally, with the cylinders, because it's a car thing. All right.
Or on the EV battery. Or on the EV battery. I don't want to leave out the EVs that are also in the game.
Very few.
Or if you tap A really quickly, you can just pedal. So it's weird.
All right, I want to thank our second sponsor. Now, I actually have, for the video viewers, Theragun is our sponsor, and I want to hold up my Theragun. This is one of our most prized possessions in my house. Not exaggerating. When we moved here to Denver, we had to put this in our carry-on luggage because we couldn't risk not having it when the movers took forever. Because my wife and I swear by this thing. Now I'm gonna turn it on. We'll see if you can actually hear it. Oh, please tell me the battery's charged. Oh, there it goes. Do you hear it? It's pretty quiet, but I'm. Oh, there we go. It doesn't take long. So this is a handheld percussive therapy device. It's hard for me to even do this ad right now because I'm just relaxing. Oh, it releases your deepest muscle tension using scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And you heard how quiet it is. I don't even know. Could you guys hear it over my mic? It's pretty quiet.
We could hear it, but we could hear you clearly. It wasn't as if it was like, what, Jeff? Speak up!
I mean, it's pretty darn quiet. And I mean, literally that's... I mean, we do a little longer than that, but that is all it takes to feel, let the stresses of everyday life lift away. I hold a lot of tension in my neck and shoulders, and I love when my wife will use the Theragun on my back for me, but you can do it yourself. It's ergonomically designed, so you can do it yourself. I just did it here on the stream. I can do it myself if I just need a pick me, if I need to release some tension in my neck. I mean, It doesn't just feel good. It actually gets to the source of pain. It releases tension using their signature percussive therapy. It goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. This is I'm telling you, you've never felt anything like it. I haven't. I had never felt anything like this thing. I went to an event and they had these to test and I was like, I don't know about that. And then somebody put it on me. I was like, oh yes, tell me, how do I get one? And now they're a sponsor. They look cool. I mean, if you see on the stream, they look like a sci-fi prop to a movie. You know, it has an OLED screen on the back. It you feel like you're holding something from the future. And my wife and I swear by these. I mean, we have so much tension. We both work from home at desks. You know, we do it on our just below our shoulder blades. It only takes a couple minutes, and it's like night and day. I really, really love how it feels. And you don't have to take my word for it. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid, elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, hundreds and thousands of customers, and me. So you can try Theragun for 30 days starting at $199. It's only $199. You get it for 30 days. Nope, I'm going to do that again. Try Theragun for 30 days starting at only $199. Go to therabody.com/DLC right now. Get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Therabody, therabody.com/DLC. Therabody.com/DLC. All right, I do want to talk about one more thing. And that is VR.
Virtual reality. VR. Virtual reality. Just VR.
Played a new VR game this week. It just came out, called Warhammer Age of Sigmar Tempest Fall.
Yeah, why weren't you in this, Philippe?
Yeah, this wasn't the one I auditioned for.
Well, I can tell because I must say the voice acting is not great in this particular game. It's serviceable, but it's not great. I do think the game is pretty darn cool. It is a, you know, VR first person full on action RPG. You have a number of different weapons. You have magic. You are fighting the hordes of the undead in melee combat, shooting off different spells, and marching through these really detailed, beautiful environments, talking to NPCs. I mean, for a VR game, I think it looks pretty darn cool. It's an Unreal Engine game. And you're doing gestures to shoot off magic. You're swinging swords. You're parrying attacks. You can even reach out and grab the enemies and rip them apart with your bare hands. You know, you grab the skull of this undead skeleton and you grab its torso and you rend them. Rip them apart. Yeah, it's fun. It very much like what was the old mech game that launched with the Oculus? Not mech, but robots. What was that game called?
Robo Recall.
Thank you. You know, Robo Recall, you could rip them apart like that. So very much like that. It also incorporates elements of the climb. A lot of these role-playing games or venture games now are kind of using the mechanics that were introduced from the climb to introduce climbing in their games. And so, you know, there's one sequence where I was going hand over hand on this rope suspended way above these enemies, and a bunch of skeletons came to life underneath me. And I was hanging from one hand on this rope and shooting off electric bolts of arcane energy out of my hand by doing this gesture forward with my hand. And I mean, I felt like I was doing it. It was really cool, like suspended above these monsters who were helpless as I was raining death from above. Really cool. I mean, it's very much the Warhammer universe where it's grim serious all the time, you know, super grim serious. But I think the game is attractive. I think there's enough fun to definitely justify it. I'm playing on Steam on my Index, so it looks really good. I have very few complaints. I mean, there is some, you know, requisite goofiness of swinging your sword around, smacking things. But I think the game asks you for precision enough. You're often attacked by multiple enemies at once. And so, you know, it can get a little wacky of that, just like, you know, painting your sword across numerous enemies. But if you take it seriously and you are actually parrying attacks and setting things up and casting magic, it feels really good. It feels like, you know, you're doing a thing. And I think it's pretty enough that it's very immersive. So Warhammer Age of Sigmar Tempest Fall for me was a pretty big plus as far as VR games go. I was impressed with it.
Which system were you playing that on, Jeff?
PC on Steam. I was using my Index to play it. So I was not playing on Oculus. But yeah, so there you go. I still haven't finished Lone Echo 2. Oh, God, I love that game so much. I don't want it to end. It's so, so, so good. And you don't kill anything. You don't kill. It's so novel. It's like almost like a puzzle game. They've really added some interesting new elements for the sequel from the first game. I just wish there were more games like it. I wish there were more VR games. I wish there were more games in general like it that just tried to do something more interesting than just shooty shooty all the bad aliens. This is much more interesting than that. Anyway, that's Lone Echo 2. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for those. But Philippe Boucher, welcome. I mean, it's been so great having you. It's been so great.
Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Christian. I have wanted to do this for the last 8 years or so. So it's been a delight. Thank you both for having me. I'm so glad that I finally got big enough.
Yeah,
that I could finally be invited onto the esteemed recording studio.
It's a very high bar. And we'll see you again in 8 more years, man. It'll be great.
I noticed. Yeah, you came to the U.S. recently, but did you go anywhere near California or Denver? No, I mean this from the guy who slept on my couch. Didn't even have.
Did I'm pretty sure you had a guest bedroom. Bed. I think you had a bed. This was before you had kids.
Who slept in the basement covered in rubbish?
Hey, I have already promised you that if ever I make it big enough, you will live in my pool house. I have made this. I have now made it on the airwaves of my DLC.
Everyone, go buy Sherlock Holmes.
Now we know why he was so nice to me earlier today.
I have done a number of voiceover on video games. Never once have I been paid in pool houses. But I appreciate your...
Huh? Daddy needs a pool house, Daddy and Philippe house. Said that I can have one.
We do things differently over here, man.
A pool house in the UK is actually what we call a toilet. Oh, no.
You can live in my toilet, is what he was telling you.
Oh,
all right. Philippe, tell folks where they can follow you and the cool stuff that you do online.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at P.A. Boucher. That's P.A.B.O.S.H.E.R. That's also my website. And if ever there are any new social media platforms, I will undoubtedly be P.A. Boucher on there as well.
Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, I'm going to plug Philippe again for him. Philippe released new reels recently, and they're phenomenal. And if you are interested and you need VO work for them, Philippe has new reels out, and they're really good.
Is Christian getting some sort of financial interest in this at this point? I'm not.
He's getting a pool house. I don't know what more to tell you, Jeff.
That's true. Philippe's a friend, and he's being too modest.
Thank you, Christian. Yeah, I did. I just released new reels. Sherlock Holmes Chapter 1 is out now on Xbox Series, PlayStation 5, and Steam, and is coming to the last gen of consoles at a later date. And yeah, if you want any, as Christian said, if you want anybody to speak into a microphone for you, and Jeff is unavailable, then come ask me.
And Philippe is actually.
I just did a game this week, guys. I can't talk about it yet, but I'm very excited.
No, was it Warhammer? Was it?
Yeah. <well, no.
laughs> Was it Warhammer Age of Sigmar Tempest?
Needed to replace this English guy.
I was going to say, actually,
they're like, "Jeff, Philippe, can you do an English accent?" I was like, "Can I do an English accent? I really can. I can." And they're like, "Wow, that's incredible! This Philippe guy was." It was, his accent was completely ridiculous. And I was like,
well, Philippe's actually from Louisiana. This whole episode he's been doing a put on. This has all been part of his reel. He's actually.
I ain't never been outside Louisiana.
Twitter's the best way for me, at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. I stream this show weekly. Typically, we record Sundays at 7:15 p.m. Pacific time on my Twitch, which is twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And to everyone in the United States and expats around the world, happiest Thanksgiving to you.
We are absolutely thankful for you. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you for being a part of this community and this show. And
putting us in your ear holes and hanging out. Yeah.
Indeed. Indeed. You can always email us here at the show, dlcfeedback@gmail.com. We love hearing from you. I'm also available on Twitter if you want to reach out to me that way, at Jeff Cannata, which is spelled with two N's and one T. And I have a number of other shows you could check out, including The Film Cast, which is a movie and TV show review podcast I'm quite proud of. You can find that wherever you get podcasts. I also do a comedy science show where you can learn something and laugh along the way. It's called We Have Concerns. You can find it at wehaveconcerns.com. Also, I do a sports show called, well, the title changes every week because you get to decide. We give the power to the fans, but it is ostensibly the fan-controlled football official podcast, and we stream it on Twitch, twitch.tv/FCF every Thursday at 3 p.m. Pacific. I think actually we're going to start earlier next week, half an hour earlier. Regardless, check that out. And then the Dungeon Run is my live play Dungeons & Dragons show. You can find that online on YouTube or as an audio podcast by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can watch us live on Twitch as well, twitch.tv/TheDungeonRun, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Pacific time. All right, let's wrap show up now with our parting gifts.
Hey, give us a suggestion.
Philippe, do you have something to help people get through their week?
I am going to rattle through some stuff. First of all, do listen to the Slash Filmcast, or to the Filmcast, excuse me, because that's my girlfriend's favorite show. Every time we watch anything, she's always like, have they done a film cast of this? I'm like, this film, this is Seven Samurai by Kurosawa. They haven't done, they haven't been going for 50 years, which
she,
is
she
one of my
sounds like she has exquisite taste, though.
She does. She does. She forces me to listen to it. It's the only way I know who you are.
Mm. I'll take any way I can get.
my real parting gift is a TV show, which is an old Canadian TV show, which I tried forcing you to watch years ago, Jeff.
It's I watched Slings the first and episode. Arrows. Sorry, go ahead. Slings and Arrows. Yes, I watched the first
Slings
episode.
And Arrows. Did you not like it?
I don't know why it didn't hook me, but I kept meaning to go back to it, and I just never have.
Slings and Arrows is about a Canadian troop set in a fictionalized version of Stratford, Ontario, where the first season they try to put on Hamlet, the second season Macbeth, the third season King Lear. And it is a show that gave David Simon, writer of The Wire, writer's envy. It is a fantastically funny, macabre, excellent show about art and making great Shakespearean art, making great theater, and the power that great art can have on human beings. So I highly recommend people seek that out and get good sleep. That's my other parting gift, is try and get yourself into a good sleeping routine. Get to bed at the same time every night, wake up every morning at the same time. Your mood will improve drastically.
Says the guy without kids.
Says the guy who's too young to have kids.
I would love to have a good sleeping routine. Boy, I had years of my life when I had a good sleeping routine. And then I made this dumb decision, you know, to get dad.
Sleep when they sleep. Go to bed when they go to bed. Get up when they get up. It's easy.
No, I don't like going to bed at 7:30 at night and then waking up four times over the course of the evening and crying for water or whatever it is. That's not how I roll, Christian.
Have you tried it, though? Because all I'm saying is, if you've not tried it, you can't knock it.
I've seen it up close, that's for sure.
He says that, but I can show you the text he sends me four times throughout the night.
Get
saying,
me water!
I need water.
Get me water! You have yet to even bring me a single water. It's very frustrating. All right, Christian, what's your parting gift?
There is a wonderful show on, well, I haven't finished it, but a show on Netflix called My Name. It is a Korean show. Did you like Squid Game? This isn't like Squid Game, but it's also Korean. Did you not like Squid Game? That's okay. This isn't like Squid Game, but it's also Korean. It is broadly about a young woman whose father is a gangster who is killed, and the thing she then needs to do to uncover his killer. Obviously, there's more to it than that, but great action, wonderfully acted, and it's a real treat. It's called My Name, and in the U.S., it is available on Netflix. I think it's Netflix produced, so I'm guessing it's Netflix everywhere, but it's on Netflix.
Not to be confused with Call Me By My Name, Say My Name, or the other My Names.
Oh, but anytime you want to suggest Lil Nas, I support that as well. That album is still so good. It's so good. I know Call Me By Your Name is also a movie, but, you know, whatever.
All right, we have my parting gift is a show also on Netflix. This show was a huge surprise to me. If you listen to the show, you know I love MOBAs, but League of Legends was never my favorite MOBA. I never got into League of Legends. I don't know the lore. Don't care because I never played League of Legends. I got into Heroes of the Storm, loved it, but League of Legends just wasn't my jam. Lots of people like League of Legends. So you can imagine my surprise when I checked out Arcane, which is the League of Legends television show, and found it phenomenal. Not just good, great. And I mentioned this on the Filmcast and said, I suspect part of the reason I like it so much is that I actually don't know anything about League of Legends. And I wasn't distracted making the connections of, oh, that character is this character and that is doing that. And oh, there's an Easter egg and there's a thing from the game. I just accepted it as a phenomenally well-drawn cartoon that takes place in a really cool fantasy world. And it's excellent. Oh my God, the animation is utterly gorgeous. Voice acting is fantastic. The story is cool. The world building is awesome. If you have no interest in League of Legends, I would urge you to still give Arcane on Netflix a try. Because I think it's just a great show. It's just a great show that also happens to be based on a video game property. Have you guys tried Arcane yet?
Season 2 is coming, but they said not in 2022. I think their press release or their statement was like, the good news, Season 2 is coming, and it will come faster than 6 years. Like Season 1, the bad news, it's not coming next year. They're doing weekly releases, but yeah, I think there are several
episodes
three
at a time
out.
Or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but, just stunning. It's, I think, another example of, like, I love Mitchell's versus the Machines, Into the Spider-Verse, mm-hmm. and I like Invincible was fun and cool also, but I like, mm-hmm. like Mitchell's versus the Machines and Into the Spider-Verse. I feel like Arcane does interesting things with animation that
oh man,
they did not need to, right? Like, it could have just rested on its laurels, and they did not
it's
do that.
It's a stunning, visually stunning show. I mean, I thought What If had some of the best animation of a TV show. I mean, not comparing it to those movies you mentioned, because I feel like there's a scale with movies that often dwarfs TV show budgets. But I thought What If was like, wow, that's really amazing animation. Arcane completely trounces What If as far as the animation goes, in my opinion. I still think animation of What If is great, but Arcane has, it is sumptuous. I mean, it is beautifully directed, beautifully animated. Worth
for
watching
frame
just
one
alone.
Too. It's not like it starts in a dimly lit cavern. It's like a feast for your eyes.
Yeah,
it's go. Great.
And it's not like you have to watch three episodes for it to get good.
It's no, it's good immediately. Yeah,
I'm gonna give that a check out now. I'm gonna have my dinner, watch an episode, and then I'm gonna go watch Throne of Blood, the Kurosawa film, because that's
nice.
What I do now. Apparently, I watch Kurosawa movies.
That sounds cool. Yeah. All right, we also got a listener suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Dan, who says, "I would like to recommend a podcast that I have been listening to recently. It's called The History of English."
Oh, sorry. I stepped on it. DLC. DLC. I don't recommend a podcast I've been listening to. Your podcast.
Hopefully people recommend our podcast. But this one is called The History of English by Kevin Stroud. It is not about the history of England, nor is it a lesson Aww. In linguistics. Rather, Aww. It explains the history of how we arrived with the English language that we know today. The oldest episodes are from 2012, and new bi-monthly episodes are still being released. It starts with the ancient Indo-European language, of which many languages have evolved, and has just recently started discussion of the early modern English period, the 1600s. Have you ever wondered why the English word black is so similar to the Spanish word blanco, yet are opposite in their meanings? Or why the letter C exists when it is only used for sounds made by two other letters, K and S? The podcast answers those questions and so much more in just the first few episodes. Give it a listen. Thanks, Dan.
That sounds fantastic. I am so in for that.
Yeah, me too. It's totally up my alley. Again, it's called The History of English by Kevin Stroud, and it is a podcast. If you'd like to have your parting gift read on our show, send it to us. DLCfeedback@gmail.com is where you send those. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Philip Boscher and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us live, making the show better in real time. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star. Sean Madigan with the incredible work, constantly adding new bumpers to the show. So grateful for that one. And thank you to each and every one of you who tune in and listen to us. If you're in the United States, please have a happy and healthy Thanksgiving. We are thankful for you. I know I will be thinking of all of you, all of the listeners that allow us to continue making the show during my week of thanks, and every week, frankly. We'll see you next time. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.